Welcome to the Jeffers Brief, only on Contra Radio Network.
And again, welcome to the Jeffers Brief. I'm John Jeffers, your founder, host, and executive producer here at the Contra Radio Network. Also heard on KYAH 540 AM, Utah's Talk Authority. Welcome to another great episode full of informative topics that you won't hear anywhere else but through me, and I will tell you what they are. You make the decision. Yeah, you got to make the decision. You make the call. I'm just going to give the information. It's not up to me to tell you what to think, how to think. But I will tell you what is going on. Because let's face it, we can't trust the mainstream media. Now, case in point. You know, this week, President Trump finally counterpunched on Elijah Cummings. Elijah Cummings has been sitting there, mouthing off, telling the president he's a racist, they're going to impeach him, they're going to get him, yada, yada, yada. Okay, yeah, we get it. You Dems don't like the president. We understand that. I get it. But the bottom line is this. If you're going to be throwing punches, be prepared to get punched back. And in this case, it seems that the president has throat-punched Cummings. And I mean throat-punched him hard. Now, if you listen to the mainstream media, they will tell you. They're going to tell you that Trump's a racist. He's a bigot. You know, my question for the mainstream media is, why don't you guys get off the air and go use your Vagisil? I'm tired of listening to you. Because you know what? The fact is, Trump had had enough. And he's made it clear throughout his presidency and this administration. You can throw your haymakers and you can throw your punches, but be prepared when you get thumped back, because it's going to be a good one. Now, this week, he's got the Democrats defending rats. You know, the furry rodents. And how it's okay for people to live in those conditions. He's got the Democrats defending that position. On the other hand, you know, as a taxpayer, how does a congressional district get $16 billion last year? That's just last year. Not million, billion, with a B. And still look like the trash heap it is. And yet, no one in the mainstream media has the intestinal fortitude or the integrity to say, you know what, maybe the president's right. Because the bottom line is this. The Democrats can't stand Trump. Trump can say the sky is blue, and those fools, in their righteous anger, will sit there and scream, oh, no, it's green. It's green. I know it is. No matter what it is, they will take the 180-degree opposite view just because President Trump said it. It doesn't matter what the president says. They are so quick to pounce on Trump, they don't even think about what they're doing. Now, a couple weeks ago, Trump actually had the Democratic Party defending AOC, the ass of Congress, and her squad. Defending them, despite the fact that Pelosi comes out and says, well, you know, they're not really, you know, the main driving power here in the Democratic caucus. Yes, they are. Yes, they are. And if you think for a moment, just because Pelosi and the ass of Congress sat down, smoked a peace pipe, and decided, let's bury the hatchet. No, they didn't. That's exactly what they want the press to talk about, because meanwhile, the press is talking about a Democratic caucus civil war. And as far as I'm concerned, Republicans stay the hell out of it and let them destroy each other. Let them destroy each other. And as far as the AOC squad, do not get rid of them. Let them take front and center stage each and every day, every week, right up to the election. Because they are the constant reminders of what the Democratic Party truly stands for. And for those of you that are listening that say, well, that's not what they stand for. The hell they don't. I don't hear any Democrats in Congress reprimanding them or distancing themselves. Instead, the president point, you know, the president has like a little laser pointer. And he points it around, And the Democrats are the cats, and they just chase it around. They chase it, and they attack, and they go crazy. If you haven't figured out that Trump is playing chess, in fact, Trump is playing 3D chess, and, well, the Democrats, they're trying to play chess, but they're only playing checkers, and they're not winning. No matter what the mainstream media says, no matter what the mainstream media does, we all know what it's really about. Don't like it. Hey, this is just crossing the wires. This is just crossing the wires. I want to get it out there. Got this. American Military News is reporting. The United States has obtained intelligence that the son of former al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden is reportedly dead, according to NBC News. NBC cited three anonymous. Oh, God. Can't these guys just get three sources without being anonymous? Three anonymous U.S. officials who said the U.S. has obtained intel that Hamza bin Laden is dead, and NBC has first reported on Wednesday, that's today, July 31st. He says Hamza's death is not confirmed, nor the circumstances of his death known. The U.S. has not confirmed his death, nor said if the United States played a role in his death. Where or when he might have died is also unknown. So there you have it. Now, we do know that the U.S. Department in March had offered a $1 million reward for any information on Hamza's whereabouts. And his last public remarks were in March of 2018 when he released a statement through al-Qaeda's media outlet in which he praised the terror group's efforts in the Arabian Peninsula and called on people in the region to revolt against Saudi Arabia, according to the United Nations. Last August, it had been reported that Hamza had married the daughter of one of the lead hijackers in the 9/11 terror attacks. And bin Laden's half-brothers confirmed the marriage in an interview with The Guardian. Ahmad and Hassan al-Attas said at the time that Hamza had advanced to a senior position within the terror organization and planned to avenge the death of his father, who was killed in a highly publicized U.S. raid in 2011, which, by the way, was richly deserved. And Hassan al-Attas has suggested that Hamza should avoid retaking the steps of his father. He says, when we thought everyone was over this, next thing I knew was Hamza saying, I'm going to avenge my father. I don't want to go through that again. If Hamza was in front of me now, I would tell him, God guide you. Think twice about what you're doing. Don't retake the steps of your father. You are entering really negative and horrible parts of your soul, Hassan al-Attas has said. November 2017, the CIA released hundreds of thousands more documents they were seized on the 2011 raid on bin Laden's compound in Abbottabad, Pakistan. So, it could be it's done, at least for this generation. What else we got here? That was something I wanted to. Hey, this picked up from Sundance. I think this is important. You think you should want to hear it, want to know about it. James Comey is under investigation. John Huber, I believe, if I remember right, was the assistant attorney general of Utah. That's right, Utah. He's investigating the Comey memos and a declaration released this week. Now, look, there's been some big movement in this in about the last 48 hours. But I want to get you caught up on this because it's important that you figure that you're with us. All right? And so basically, jumping juju bones. There's big news in here. Actual bombshells for real TikToks and much, much more. Listen up. Now, the former acting attorney general, Matt Whitaker, who I liked, he appeared on Fox News to discuss the replacement of Dan Coats with John Ratcliffe as head of the ODNI and the current status of AG Barr's ongoing reviews into prior DOJ and FBI misconduct. Whitaker posits the placement of Ratcliffe as looking to the aggregate intelligence apparatus and seeing if there are systemic issues and failures for how the investigations were kicked off and the engagements with other countries. Oh, by the way, you know what? Before I continue on with this, Christopher Wray, he is such a worm. He is the director of the FBI. He needs to be fired, too. He is doing everything he can to cover the FBI and the DOJ's misdeeds. Everything he possibly can. He needs to go. He and Comey need to sit around in the backyard drinking their wine coolers and discussing how much they hate Trump and yada, yada, yada. But, you know, he is a worm. He needs to go. Now, getting back to it, You know, Whitaker summarizes U.S. Attorney John Durham as focused on the origin of the intelligence operation against candidate Trump and prosecuting anyone that needs to be prosecuted. By the way, that seems to confirm Durham as an official investigation, not a review. Don't let the MSM tell you it's a review. It's a criminal investigation. Now comes the bombshell. Now I'm going to play this interview for you. At about 1.5 minutes, while seemingly not realizing anything he just said, Whitaker outlines U.S. Attorney John Huber as reviewing anything related to Comey's memos and the like, and boom, there it is. So that finally explains why the DOJ is fighting the release of the David Archie declarations in the FOIA lawsuit by CNN. If you don't know, goes into my last episode last week. I will tell you what the Archie declarations are. This is really interesting. So about a minute and a half into it, here, I'll play it for you.
Former Acting Attorney General Matthew Whitaker. John Ratcliffe is a man you know well.
Yeah, John and I were U.S. attorneys in the Bush administration, and he went on to success electorally, and I went back to the Department of Justice, ultimately becoming the acting attorney general for 4 months.
How do you think he'll do in this new role?
You know, I think he's perfectly qualified to do this role. I think he's a smart, talented individual. He's, you know, sort of cut his teeth at the Department of Justice, so he understands sort of all the pieces and parts of not only the department, but the government now at ODNI. I think he's just perfect for that. He's straight out of central casting for that role.
I know that you and for many of your colleagues, one of the biggest goals here is restoring confidence in the Department of Justice. And you think Bill Barr is the guy to do that?
Yeah, I always thought since Bill Barr was identified as going to be the person that took over from after I took over for Sessions and then he took over for me, as I really think Bill is the perfect person to sort of turn over every rock and restore the confidence of the American people and the Congress and the courts in the Department of Justice. Now, there's a lot of great people at the Department of Justice, don't get me wrong. I think one of the challenges is we had several acts that appeared to be politically motivated. And I think Attorney General Barr is going to figure this out, and he's going to look at the genesis of this investigation. He's got John Durham looking at that, who's a U.S. attorney out of Connecticut. Mm-hmm. He's going to prosecute anybody that...
Okay, listen carefully. Here it is.
Needs to be prosecuted. You know, we still have Huber out there looking at some of these things regarding Comey's memos and the like. And so I just think there's a lot of things that Bill Barr is going to be bringing to a conclusion here. And since the Mueller investigation is over now, yep, and now we can focus on some of these questions that I think the American people have a right to know as to how these investigations started and whether any of them were politically motivated.
So to be clear, John Ratcliffe, he will not have prosecutorial powers, but if it is found that laws were broken, Bill Barr will prosecute.
Yeah, Bill Barr is the person. Now, what Ratcliffe can do at DNI is he can look at sort of the entire intelligence community and see if there were systemic failures for how these investigations were kicked off and some of the issues with Papadopoulos and others and how other countries were interacted with. So I think it's going to be very interesting. But with Barr and Ratcliffe both working these angles, I think they're the perfect team.
And, of course, Democrats have dismissed this investigation. Imagine that. It's gotten political. But, I mean, the politics around this, and we just came off of the Robert Mueller hearings last week. It sounds to me like you have full faith when you mentioned John Durham and Michael Horowitz, that these are the guys to restore justice to the Justice Department. I want to ask you about what we just heard from Byron York there and John Ratcliffe sort of dropping that bomb on Sunday, talking to Maria Bartiromo, but talking about Glenn Simpson, Bruce Orr, James Clapper, James Comey. Where do you think he gets?
Well, there's a lot of unanswered questions here, and maybe some of the answers are simple, but we don't know. And I think this is very important. This is where the transparency and the accountability needs to come to bear. If somebody did something wrong or somebody did something criminal, then they need to be held to account. That's the American system, and that's the way the Department of Justice works. But at the same time, if they're not, if everybody was above board, then the facts will tell the truth. I mean, that's what we need to rely on.
And, of course, on the part of Democrats, Jerry Nadler has been relentless on his calls for investigation, saying that this president is not above the law. And it does not look like Democrats are going to stop for their push for investigations, and of course, you're seeing that growing call for impeachment of this president.
They're not, but it's over. And really, I was in the room with the president as acting attorney general for several months, and what I saw is someone that was focused on making America great again and making the experience of the American people something that is as good as it's ever been. And so, you know, you look at the economy, you look at the unemployment rate, you look at all of the things and the advances we're making in the immigration system. I mean, just this president is accomplishing so much of his agenda. And I just, you know, we need to get this Mueller investigation behind us and move on to the important work of the American people. But at the same time, if somebody did something wrong, hold them to account.
That's right. Hold them to account. Now, some of you, I know you know, I'll finish it up. Then I'll got something I really want to drop on you. Now, unlike that obscure comment, likely a slip that would not many would catch. There has been no valid explanation by the DOJ about any investigation of the Comey memos, which would also encompass the Archie declarations. You have to remember this. It's the Archie declarations that Chris Wray is fighting tooth and nail to getting out. They don't want the Comey memos, much less the Archie declarations, out in the public, because it will destroy, absolutely destroy the deep state. And the more they fight it, you know it's got some good stuff in there that we all need to know. Now, if U.S. Attorney John Huber is indeed looking at those Comey memos, that would explain why the DOJ is fighting the release of the Archie declarations in the D.C. Circuit Court with Judge James E. Boasberg. Now it makes sense. That little obscure comment by Whitaker is a big effing deal. Oddly, and well conspicuously, the DOJ has never said they are investigating the Comey memos as an argument in their legal position in the FOIA case. The specific, albeit innocuous, statement by Whitaker, which you heard, is the first indication therein. It sounds like the DOJ is keeping that investigation of Comey's memos content hidden, but Whitaker just let it slip. Now, with that new information, and it is a fact that U.S. Attorney John Huber is investigating Comey, the conservative treehouse, which is, you know, where Sundance gets all his information, gives it to him, and puts it back out again. Love Sundance. Don't know who you are, but man, I'll tell you, your information is incredibly good. They're going to reverse a position on the release of the Archie declarations, and they're going to support their non-release. If, in fact, they are investigating the Comey memos, the leaks, and everything else, it is very important that maybe, just maybe, CNN shouldn't get the Archie declarations, because otherwise CNN could very well use that as a preemptive strike. I don't want that to happen, and I don't think you do either. So, it is the opinion of this man that the content of the diary by former FBI Director James Comey, as outlined in what has formerly been called the Comey memos, is devastating to the FBI, which is why that worm, Christopher Wray, would rather roll in the mud and just let this cancer continue to grow and grow and grow, as opposed to just using sunlight, get it out there, take whatever beating you got coming and move on. But how do we know? Because the DOJ and the FBI is fighting like hell to keep even the descriptions of the memos content from becoming public. Now it appears that the diary is being reviewed by U.S. Attorney John Huber, which that means FBI Director James Comey is under criminal investigation. Got it? You with me now? You follow me? Okay, good stuff coming. Good stuff coming. Trust me on this. You guys are going to flip when I tell you the next one. It's really good stuff. Now, I said we're going to do it. We're going to do it. Joe DeGenova. I like Joe. He's a guest usually on Lou Dobbs, 6 o'clock on the Fox Business Network. He and his wife, Victoria Tensing. Again, these two are like Sundance. They've got some great, great sources. And this is important. I'm going to play this for you because this is important stuff for you. Today, July 31st, this is 2 days ago, follow my timeline. Speaking to WMAL Radio, former U.S. Attorney Joe DeGenova informs the audience that declassified documents will begin to be made public starting Wednesday, July 31st. That's today. Additionally, Mr. DeGenova states confidently that U.S. Attorney John Durham is not conducting a review, but is conducting a full criminal investigation with a grand jury impaneled and currently receiving testimony from witnesses. Stop it here. Look, what you have to understand, we've been waiting for the IG Horowitz's report. It should have been out back in June. It should have been out this month, but it keeps getting delayed. And you know why? I'm going to tell you why. Because there are people who the IG and the Attorney General, Bill Barr, have interviewed. Well, their amnesia has cleared up sufficiently so that now, as I've said months ago on this very show, that they're going to start their beating feet to Barr's office and to Horowitz's office to, shall we say, clarify some of the things that they said or maybe forgot about. But then, miraculously, they've been healed of their amnesia, and please don't prosecute us. Here's what I know. And that is why IG Horowitz's report keeps getting delayed. These people are coming in. And I guarantee you, you know as well as I do, most people who are involved with the deep state don't have a spine, don't have any integrity, don't have any courage, and they are willing to sell out their fellow deep staters in order to save their own butts. You follow me now? You get it? So, what are we looking at here? We're looking at, I'll let you know when you want to hear this. This is good stuff. I think you'll like it. But I'm going to give you, before I play it, let me finish up with this, all right? Joe DiGenova is making very specific statements with measurable and specific action to come on a very specific day. That's good news. But on May 23rd, 2019, Trump gave AG Bill Barr unilateral authority to declassify documents. A month later, against the backdrop of more evidence surfacing showing corruption within the DOJ and FBI, which is around June 14th, and with a negative balance in the trust account, 23 House Republicans asked President Trump not to wait. Now, here's a list of material possible for declassification and the intelligence offices who hold custodial authority over the compartmented documents. Now, this was first outlined in 2018. This is what we think. All versions of the Carter Page FISA application, DOJ, the FBI, and the ODNI, Office of Director of National Intelligence, for those that aren't aware of it, all of Bruce Orr's 302s filled out by the FBI, that's from the FBI and ODNI. All of Bruce Orr's emails, that's FBI, DOJ, CIA, and ODNI. All supportive documents and material provided by Bruce Orr to the FBI. All relevant documents pertaining to the supportive material within the FISA application. And this is part of the FBI, Department of Justice, National Security Division, the Department of State, the CIA, the DNI, the NSI, and the ODNI. All intelligence documents that were presented to the Gang of Eight in 2016 that pertain to the FISA application used against U.S. person Carter Page, including all intelligence documents that may not have been presented to the FISA court. That's from the CIA, the FBI, the DOJ, the ODNI, the Department of State, and the NSA. Presumably, this would include the recently revealed State Department Kavalak email and the FBI transcripts from wiretaps of George Papadopoulos, also listed in the Carter Page FISA, also known as Bucket 5. All unredacted text messages and email content between Page and Strzok on all devices. The originating CIA, EC, or two-page electronic communication from former CIA Director Brennan to FBI Director James Comey that started Operation Crossfire Hurricane in July of 2016. Additionally, since the 2018 list was developed, more information has resurfaced about underlying material. This added to the possibility of documents for declassification. President Trump can prove the July 31st, 2016 Crossfire Hurricane counterintelligence operation originated from a scheme within the intelligence apparatus by exposing preceding CIA operation that created the originating electronic communication, the EC memo, and declassify that two-page EC document that Brennan gave to Comey. The trail is found within the Weissman report and the use of Alexander Downer. Release and declassify all the Comey memos that document the investigative steps taken by the FBI as an outcome of the operation coordinated by CIA Director John Brennan in early 2016. Brennan and Comey both need to be sitting in federal prison, as far as I'm concerned. Right next to Hillary. They can all three sit there and bore each other. Reveal the November 2015 through April 2016 the FISA 702 search query abuse by declassifying the April 2017 court opinion written by the FISA, the FISC presiding judge Rosemary Collier. Show the FBI contractors behind the 85% fraudulent search queries. CrowdStrike, anyone? Fusion GPS, anyone? And no, Mr. Mueller, it is not an app. Nellie Orr, Daniel Rickman. This was weaponized surveillance and domestic political spying operation. The trail was laid down in specific detail by Judge Collier. Subpoena the former DOJ, National Security Division head John Carlin, or haul him in front of a grand jury and get his testimony about why he hid the abuse from the FISA court in October 2016, why the DOJ, National Security Division, rushed the Carter Page application to beat NSA Director Admiral Mike Rogers to the FISA court, and why Carlin quit immediately thereafter, because he knows it was wrong and his butt was going to be on the line. Prove the Carter Page FISA application from October 2016 was fraudulent and based on deceptions to the FISA court. Declassify the entire document and release the transcripts of those who signed the application and or depose those who have not yet testified. And of course, the creation of the Steele dossier was the cover-up operation. Release all of Page and Strzok's text messages without redactions. Let sunlight pour in on the actual conversations that were taking place when Crossfire Hurricane in July of 16 and the FISA application October of 16 were taking place. The current redactions were made by the people who weaponized the intelligence system for political surveillance and spy operation. This is why Page and Strzok's texts are redacted. Release all of Bruce Orr's 302s, FBI notes from interviews and debriefing sessions, and other relevant documents associated with the interviews of Bruce Orr and his internal communications, including exculpatory evidence that Bruce Orr may have shared with FBI agent Joseph Pienka, and get a deposition from this Pienka fellow. Bruce Orr is the courier, carrying information from those outside to those on the inside. Release the August 2nd, 2017 two-page scope memo provided by the Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosensnake to Special Counsel Robert, did I write a report, Mueller, to advance the fraudulent Trump investigation and initiate the more purposeful obstruction of justice investigation. Also release the October 20th, 2017 second scope memo recently discovered. The scope memos are keys to unlocking the underlying spy and surveillance cover-up. You got it? You heard it here. You heard it here, right here on CRN. You're not going to hear from the MSM. They will never, ever, ever, ever tell you what's what. It's Contra Radio Network here and myself here on the Jeffers Brief and some of the other shows here on Contra Radio Network will give you that information. But in the meantime, listen to this. When you get to about 4:58, you're going to hear DeGeneva going absolutely berserk. He's going to tell you what's going on.
Job, but here's the truth. The reason Barr was given declassification authority was because Coates was in the way, as was Chris Wray, the FBI director. They were fighting tooth and nail, phony cover-ups, allegedly to protect sources and methods, when Chris Wray was simply trying to protect the FBI from just hugely embarrassing details that are going to come out. By the way, the declassification process will start this week. There are going to be documents released, I think, by Wednesday. The Attorney General, as I understand it, is in the process of getting those ready to come out. There are going to be some of the Devin Nunes documents that he requested, and then a series of other releases will come after that. That's because Durham is progressing very, very quickly in his criminal investigation. This is not a review, quote-unquote, of what went on. This is a criminal investigation of senior DOJ and FBI officials from the Obama administration and intelligence community people, including John Brennan. This is a federal grand jury. This is not a review. This is not an IG audit. This is not some Congressional Research Service look at history. This is a criminal investigation of a bunch of people who tried to seditiously overthrow the president of the United States. So the stuff is going to start coming out this week.
Seditiously overthrow. They got a word for that. It's called a coup. A coup. And we got a place for people like that. It's called federal prison. Enjoy.
Okay, so let me just pause on the details that you're saying here. Wednesday, that means when you say come out, you mean to the public. We'll be able to see documents Wednesday?
My understanding is by Wednesday, yes.
Okay, and then on the issue of Devin Nunes, what were the documents Devin Nunes was seeking? Was this related to unmasking or wiretapping? What?
They were all the things related to... He made several requests by letter, as you know, of various items, 302s, applications for the FISA court. I mean, Devin Nunes has made many, many requests for declassification. I'm not sure which ones are going to come out first, but they're coming now. That's what we've been told.
All right, and now we've been told. Thank you for that. More with Joe DeGeneva in a moment. All right, we're talking to former U.S.
You want to hear more? Okay.
Attorney Joe DeGeneva, always great to talk to Joe on a Monday. Joining me this morning, too, is Kelsey Bowler from the Heritage Foundation and Independent Women's Forum. Kelsey, you've got a question for Joe.
Hey, Joe, it's great to have you on this morning. You are a lawyer, also former U.S. attorney to the District of Columbia. We were just talking about this Nicholas Sandman case against the Washington Post being dismissed by a federal judge on Friday afternoon. He was suing for $250 million.
Okay, you already know about that, but there you go. Now, sometime today, we're going to see that. We're going to get that, hopefully. All right. What else have we got here? Oh, so many things. So many things. Oh, no. Here you go. Gateway Pundit reporting like an hour ago that new documents show the FBI agents went to Comey's home to retrieve the classified memos. Comey told agents two memos were missing. That's because you're a snake and a leaker, Comey. You always have been, and you always will be. So the conservative watchdog group Judicial Watch has announced Wednesday it obtained 6 pages of records from the FBI showing that 1 month after FBI Director James Comey was fired by Trump, FBI agents visited Comey's home to retrieve 4 Trump memos as evidence, quote unquote. So the agent showed up at Comey's home to collect the evidence in June, and one of his memos was written on June 6th, nearly a full month after he was fired on May 9th. The memos retrieved by FBI agents on June 7th, 2017 were dated February 14th, 2017, March 30th, 2017, April 11th, 2017, and one is dated last night at 6:30 p.m. Now, the FBI docs also revealed that Comey recalled to agents that he wrote 2 other memos after he spoke with Trump that he claimed were missing. According to Comey, one of the missing memos was emailed to Rubicki and McCabe. Remember McCabe, who I.G. Horowitz said has been, shall we say, less than candid? And he got him fired. Yeah, less than candid. Translation for the average working man is, he was lying his ass off. And there you go. Judicial Watch also received a newly declassified FBI document dated June 16th, 2017, in which FBI agents described Comey telling them that he had written 2 additional Trump memos that it could no longer find. Comey was interviewed at his residence at, and that part's redacted. This interview was scheduled in advance for the purpose of providing certain classified memoranda, which are the memos, to Comey for review. After being advised of the identity of the interviewing agents and the nature of the interview, Comey provided the following information. After reviewing the memos, Comey spontaneously stated, to the best of his recollection, 2 were missing. Now, in the first occurrence, Comey said at an unknown date and time between January 7, 2017, when Comey believed was the date of his briefing at Trump Tower and Trump's inauguration on January 20th, Comey received a phone call from President-elect Donald Trump. The originating telephone number may have had a New York area code. Following the telephone conversation, Comey drafted and emailed a memo to James Rubicki and then FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe. In the second instance, Comey was on his way to an FBI leadership conference in Leesburg, Virginia, March 9, 2017, when he was diverted to Liberty Crossing to respond to a request from Trump to contact him. Comey contacted Trump from Liberty Crossing on a top-secret telephone line. The conversation was all business and related to, it's redacted, we don't know. Comey is less sure he drafted a memo for his conversation, but if he did, he may have sent it to the FBI's top secret network. It is important to note that the FBI visit on June 7th took place the day before Comey admitted leaking the Trump memos to his friend turned lawyer turned unpaid FBI official Daniel Rickman, who then leaked the contents of the memos to the New York Times. I asked a friend of mine to share the content of the memo with a reporter for the New York Times. I asked him to because I thought that might prompt the appointment of a special counsel, Comey said before the Senate Intelligence Committee on June 8, 2017. Now, the New York Times published a report on May 16th based on Comey's memo related to his conversation with Trump about General Flynn, and the next day Mueller was appointed a special counsel. All the reports say four out of the seven memos Comey wrote, stemming from nine conversations he had with Trump, were considered classified. Experts familiar with the documents argue that all the memos contain classified information. These extraordinary FBI docs further confirm that James Comey should never have had FBI files on President Trump at his home, and that the FBI failed to secure and protect these private and classified files, stated Judicial Watch President Tom Fitton. Mr. Comey's illegal leaking these FBI files as part of his vendetta against President Trump, directly resulting in the corrupt appointment of Robert Mueller, ought to be the subject of a criminal investigation. There. It's there. Oh. Well, so, you know, we were talking about the president likes to counterpunch. And, you know, Comey's coming out saying, you know, Baltimore's this, Baltimore's that. But President Trump is a racist for saying this. Well, let's flash back to 1999, where Elijah Cummings called Baltimore drug-infested. Shall we all listen together? I think we should. Let me get it going here.
I'm sure that you are well aware that I'm a strong advocate of sound counter-narcotics efforts. And I will say it every single time I have an opportunity. Sometimes I really just think we don't get it. This morning, I left my community of Baltimore, a drug-infested area, where a lot of the drugs that we're talking about today have already taken the lives of so many children. The same children that I watched 14 or 15 years ago as they grew up, now walking around like zombies. This is only 40 miles away from here. And, you know, as much, I am very concerned about what is happening in Colombia, and I think we ought to do everything we can to address this issue. I come here today to speak for the dead, the ones who don't even know where Colombia is, the ones who, like I said, a few years ago, had hope. The ones who had become victims, and I call them victims because every time I see one of them standing on a corner like zombies, the pain, I cannot begin to tell you how painful it is because I know that they're in so much pain that they don't even know they're in pain. And that's why it's so important to me and to my district that we concentrate more of our efforts on treatment.
There you go. There you go. There you have it. But because President Trump's the racist, that actually brings it up. Cummings himself brought it up in 1999. Where did the money go? Well, this is my opinion. If you want to find out where that money went, you got to do a forensic audit. Got to find out where that money went. Can they do it? I don't know. Will they do it? I don't know. But I don't think Elijah Cummings is as clean as he would like us all to think. If anything, I would suggest, and I don't know this is true. This is just my opinion. I'm thinking that maybe, because his wife is involved with a great many organizations in the Baltimore area, and I'm wondering if that money wasn't laundered through those organizations and then back into the Cummings bank accounts, secret bank accounts. Now, we do know there was a federal raid on the Baltimore mayor's office in April. My guess is that POTUS Trump knows the results of the raid. He knows what was gotten and what's happened. So, that's just my opinion. I'm guessing. I don't know. The president did not see fit to put me in his loop, so I don't know. But just for this little blurb from 1999, but apparently the race mob gives him a pass. They give Cummings a pass, but yet President Trump's the racist, right? Is that how this works out? Because it sure as hell looks that way to me. I don't know what to tell you. I don't. I wish I did. But here we are. Another day closer. And hopefully sometime today, some of those documents we talked about will be released to the public. Because we need to see. Now the question is, when those documents are released, which documents is the MSM going to cherry pick? Because you know that you know that you know they're going to cherry pick those documents apart. That's why it's incumbent that you, the average Americans like me, get out there and read it. Read what it says. Read what they pretend. And don't let anybody try to tell you what they mean. Because the fact of the matter is, the documents speak for themselves, period. Now, what they did with those documents, well, that's up what we have to find out. But I think we pretty much know what they've done. And therefore, it's that important that we get a good look at this. So, there we go. There it is. Learn it, love it, live it. Now, tonight is part two of the Democratic Clown Show. By the way, I find myself using mumblit.com, mumblit.com, more than I do Facebook. Why? Because there's no community standards that are, you know, have a double standard algorithm attached to it. There's no gulag. Say what you want. Post whatever you want. But don't worry about where, you know, some snowflake who just happens to beat with a hammer and sickle coming up and saying, "Oh, that's it. You're in the gulag. You're in Facebook jail. You're a Facebook felon." No. That's why I like Mumblit quite a bit. I would suggest you check it out. I think you'll like it. Now, before you watch part two of the clown show, because last night was the Thriller in Vanilla, all white candidates. By the way, did you listen to Bernie Sanders and especially Liz Warren rail and bitch about corporations? Those two clowns have taken more money from corporations. And I don't know what these corporations are thinking. Like, maybe they're under the impression that they better get on the Democrats' good side. Why? They're sitting there slapping you down, calling you, you know, every name under the sun, but yet they're taking the money, and the corporations are giving it. Why, on God's name, would you give money to somebody who just sat there and slapped you down like a dog? Why? Well, let's talk about the Democrats' freebie wish list. Let's talk about the proposals and their price tags. I think you'll like this. You know, Democrats want people to rely on the government. They do. So as the 2020 Democrats debate each other in Detroit this week, a couple of divides are emerging within the party, including how many services should be provided for free and to whom. Now, this is another thing. You listeners in Vermont, I have to ask you something, my friends. Why do you keep reelecting Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders is the guy who wrote a book extolling the virtues of socialism and trashing capitalism, turning around, selling that book in the same economic forum that he trashes to become a millionaire. He made a lot of money on it. And then, when it's all said and done, he uses every tax loophole he could find to lower his tax rate. He excoriates the corporations for doing the same thing that he did. This is also the same guy who screams that we need $15 minimum wage. Well, when he decided, his staff decided, that's a great idea, Bernie. We would like to be paid $15 an hour. At first he said no. Then he said yes, and then cut their hours. Why? Why is this guy even considered to be a valid candidate for the highest office in the land? But anyway, Sanders, for example, he drew fire on Tuesday night, last night, for saying he would provide health care to undocumented immigrants should he secure the presidency. The opponents argued his Medicare for All vision would shut down hospitals and lead to an underfunded system. Now, some of the front runners in the race, including Sanders and Massachusetts Senator Liz Warren, have promised a number of free programs to Americans. That is, they are going to loot the public treasury and redistribute that wealth, including everything from health care to college education to complete student loan forgiveness. Former Maryland Representative John Delaney used his opening statement on Tuesday night to hit their impossible promises, which he believes would ultimately result in Trump's reelection, which we can only hope, from his lips to God's ears. Just how much of these free services and programs cost? Well, here's a look at the estimates for some of these popular proposals. Student loan forgiveness. Sanders and Warren have unveiled proposals to partially or completely wipe out Americans' student debt liabilities. As of last month, outstanding student loans totals stood at nearly $1.6 trillion. There are about 43 million borrowers with outstanding debt. Eliminating all student debt could cost around $1.6 trillion, though the exact price tag is unknown at this point. Free public college, too. Sanders' plan to eliminate the $1.6 trillion worth of student debt also calls for making the U.S. public colleges tuition-free, which would cost $2.2 trillion. Hold on a minute. You know what? I remember back in the 80s when Reagan was running against Mondale. Do you remember, you know, there was outrage that some programs were going to cost millions of dollars. Millions. Last couple years, we've been seeing the word billions. Billions thrown about. Nobody blinks an eye. Today we're talking about trillions. Where does the fiscal insanity end? Now, he has said those costs could be covered by a tax. Imagine that, a Democrat wanting a new tax levied on trades of stocks, bonds, and derivatives. According to his office, that proposal would raise $2.4 trillion. Really? Why don't you say 2.5 and be done with it? It's a rounder number. Warren's student debt cancellation plan would also include free public college education. So let me get this straight. Who's going to pay the professors and the teachers? They're not going to do it for free. But anyways, she estimates her overall, her overall education plan would cost $1.25 trillion. She said costs could be covered by her ultra-millionaire tax. I got news for you, Liz, and anybody else who thinks that's a great idea. There is not enough money in this universe to cover that kind of... There just isn't. And what is an ultra-millionaire? Define that. You know, here in Illinois, we had that fat bastard Pritzker scream how he got elected on the premise of class warfare. We're going to make the rich pay their fair share. The thing is, you got people who don't know the rich left Illinois long ago. He finally admitted prior to signing the tax hikes into law that, yeah, it's probably going to fall on the middle class. Well, guess what? It's that the ultra-millionaire tax will fall upon us again. They keep coming back to the well over and over again. Tax and spend, tax and spend. Medicare for all. While Democrats are divided on the best way to reform the U.S. healthcare system, a fact that was glaringly obvious on the debate stage on Tuesday, Warren and Sanders have called for a transition to a single-payer system. That is, the U.S. government will pay for everything. That would eliminate the role of private insurance companies. Now, an estimate from the Mercatus Center at George Mason University has pegged the cost of Sanders' bill, which Warren supports, now get ready, grab your cojones at this one, at around $32 trillion. $32 trillion. This government is broke, period. But yet, they're going to spend $32 trillion. The Green New Deal. We all heard about it. That's the climate change plan, which calls for massive investments in climate-friendly infrastructure to reduce greenhouse gas emissions to zero by 2050. That means we'd all be dead. Because if you know, greenhouse gas emissions, most of those greenhouse gas emissions is carbon dioxide. That's right. It's when we exhale, human beings exhale, they exhale what? Carbon dioxide. So by 2050, no one will be alive, so don't worry about that. But anyways, the Green New Deal could carry a cost as high as, get ready to kiss your butt goodbye. Because the cost for this is $93 trillion over the course of 10 years. That's $9.3 trillion over 10 years. Yeah, I'll say it again because I know it's breathtaking. $93 trillion over the course of 10 years. Now, a new study found that the average American household could be on the hook for anywhere between $70,000 and $100,000 during the first year of the plan's implementation, with only slight reductions in the years that followed. So basically, they want to tax you for every penny that you'll ever earn or make. Let's talk about the $15 minimum wage. Now, according to data from the Congressional Budget Office, raising the country's federal minimum wage to $15 per hour would eliminate as many as 3.7 million jobs while boosting wages for about 17 million people. There. There you go. So when you hear these clowns talking, you keep that number in your head. Keep it in mind. All right? This is what kind of these people have no clue about how businesses run and where the money comes from. And if they do know, they don't care. Instead, they want you to, when it comes time, with whoever wins the election or the primary, the Democrats, they're going to ask you a really basic question. And they're going to say, are you going to believe me or your lying wallet? That's the question they're going to be asking. And I think we could all trust our wallets to know before we trust any politician. All right, for you preppers out there, this one's for you. Prepperless, survivalist. Here's a list of the first 10 things to do after the crap hits the fan. I want to thank Urban Survival Site for providing this. So it's finally happened. You've been preparing for a disaster like this for years, and now it's actually here. The crap is officially hitting the fan, so what should you do? When you're in a critical incident, many people will be glued to their TVs, smartphones, and radios, unless the disaster is an EMP, in which case they'll all be looking like zombies at their phones trying to get it to work. For those of you who are smart enough to realize what's going on, that's your golden hour to move and make your move then. Now, while all those people are frozen in shock, you need to leap into action. Time is of the essence. If you and your family are going to survive, there are some things you need to do right away. What things, you ask? Well, here you go. Here's a list of 10 things you should do right after a critical incident. Here's the list. You need to, one, establish communication with your family. Two, assess the situation. That is this local, regional, or national? How bad is it truly? That kind of thing. Number three, get home to your bug out location. Number four, once you arrive, you need to secure your location. Number five, observe OPSEC. I hate that term. It's dumb. I don't like it. But there is, you need to understand what's going on. You need to start putting your plan into effect as soon as you arrive at your location. Most people will not bug out. They will go home. Once you're there, your operational security needs to be put into effect. Number six, blend in as much as possible. We call this the gray man. Don't be jumping into your camis right away. Number seven, you need to gather as much intel as possible. That is, you need to know what's going on. I would suggest you do more listening than you do talking. Number eight, you need to avoid large crowds. Number nine, you need to focus on bugging in for the next 2 to 4 weeks to see what comes up, what happens. After that, number 10, decide the next step. What is actually going, what do you need to do after those 10 things are done? But that's it, really, in a nutshell. Oh, all right. Okay, we got just a brief few minutes. But anyways, let's do it, shall we? I decided maybe a new song for this, huh? What do you think? It's time for, of course, Social Justice Warriors. Social Justice Warriors, what are they going to do this week? Well, you got Prince Harry, who says people don't understand their unconscious racism. Progressive Prince Harry has said that people expressing racist behavior do so because of their upbringing, but may not know they are acting in a racist way because they don't understand their unconscious biases. I think the prince has sucked in too much sand in the Iraqi desert. And, he's married to that absolutely liberal Hollywood type, so I'm sure she's infecting him. Ugh. Vizio. Disney Channel's Andy Mack will feature the first gay teen couple in the season finale. So, there you go. Now we got Disney on board. Free speech activist Lindsay Shepherd's Twitter account is restored after ban for misgendering. She was, her account was suspended after widespread outrage. Shepherd was initially banned from social media platform after getting into an argument with a transgender user. Oh, my. Meanwhile, Colorado State retracts claim that the word America is offensive, but says the word man is. Oh, good Lord. What's it going to take? I don't know. You guys, which one do you guys like best? The Looney Tunes or the Dance of the Cuckoos? I mean, they're both really good, and they both pretty much describe, well, you can watch the Dance of the Cuckoos tonight. Yes. Now, how much time I got? About a minute? Okay. So I got about a minute left. Do me a favor. If you like what you hear, give KYAH a call. KYAH, 540 AM. Give them a call. Tell them how much you like the show, if you would, please. That'd be great. I'd appreciate it. Some of you have. Please, can you do so? If you missed the show or maybe you're listening on your car and you want to hear some, you know, the rest of the show, I need you to go to ContraRadioNetwork.podbean.com. Type in ContraRadio Network in the search box. Show will pop up. You'll see all past episodes. You can listen to them and share them with your friends and use them to piss off your Democratic friends. Why? because I like it. I do. But anyways, hey, do me a favor. Give me $2. Make sure you rate the shows if you're listening on Apple, listening on TuneIn, listening on any platform. Do me a favor. Rate the shows. If you like them, rate them. That's good. Until then time, I am John Jeffers saying goodbye for this week and thanking you again for listening to the Jeffers Brief.